Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
And a very warm welcome to the latest edition of The Game's Gone with Tom Ross. And I'm absolutely thrilled that my guest this week is the legend that is Andy Gray. Very close to legend, have you noticed?
Legend's good. I think legend's more appropriate, Tom.
But I'm with Andy Gray. Just like to remind you, please leave us a review. We love your reviews. And the podcasts have gone absolutely brilliant. We've been in the top 5% of podcasts, which is unbelievable. So thank you very much for that. Andy, let's kick off firstly.
How are Celtic going to do this?
Well, you didn't mention Blues, which is a change. Talk to me about, as a young lad in Scotland, where was your inspiration from to be a footballer?
Probably my brothers. I was the youngest of four boys, and all three of them, if I'm being truthful, about the age of maybe between 10 and 15, were better than me.
Wow.
They were better than me. And for various reasons. One made it, my second brother, James. He did play for Clydebank as a professional, but only for a year, and then he emigrated to Canada. But my older brother, Willie, he was very good. He was left-footed like me, like a Jim Baxter type player. Anyone who remembers Jim Baxter.
Sorry
if you're too young to remember Jim. But if you ever have a look at Jim Baxter play, he was sensational. My brother was a bit like him, but he had to sort of get out to work because my mum and dad had split up and, you know, were four boys there to be fed.
Yeah.
So he had to go and work and what have you. So he suffered. And Duncan, my brother above me, he was probably the best of us all, ability-wise. But, yeah, his head was...
Duncan was a good player.
Duncan was an extremely good player, Tom. But he got in with... I was going to say the wrong crowd. It wasn't the wrong crowd. He got in with a bunch of lads who were great lads. I knew them all. Yeah. And he kind of would rather go out on a Friday night and have a few bevvies with them than prepare for a game. And I'll never forget a story where we got picked to play for Glasgow Schoolboys, Dunks. And we were all so excited about it. So he's 5 years older than me, Duncan. So he would have been about maybe 16, probably 17. So I'd have been 10, 11, something like that. And I was so excited. And we went to bed that night, and Dunks had been out. It was out. It was a Friday, and he was supposed to get up and get ready to travel on the Saturday. So I woke up, and we all stayed in the same bedroom, obviously, because it was that kind of place. And I woke up, and I looked over to Dunks' bed, and he wasn't there. And I thought, oh, he's not left, is he? And I ran in to see my mum. I said, Mum, where's Dunks? Is he left? He says, he's not been in yet.
Whoosh.
So missed the bus, missed the trip. That was basically the end of Dunks' football career. So I guess it was left to me, as the youngest, to take the baton on and run with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think my brothers were the driving force for me. And then it was just desire, I think. It was the only thing I wanted to do, Tom. You know me. You've known me a long time.
Was that all it was, football?
The only thing I ever wanted to do was football. I was kicking a football in a can around the streets. It's an old story what you hear from people my age about in Glasgow. People used to play football with cans in the street, and people go, yeah, surely not. But you did. Some people couldn't afford a football.
No.
So sometimes we did just knock a can across the street to each other. And I just loved playing football.
Were you a Glasgow Green man?
No, I was at the other side. Sent out to a overspill, as they were called back then, called Drumchapel.
Yeah.
It was up on the way out to Loch Lomond. It was it was great.
Beautiful.
I mean, our house, our tenement building was there. And then about through the next tenement building, there was fields galore. So you're basically living in the country. I could walk 50 yards and I'd be in the country. And we used to use these fields, farmers' fields, all the time. We play football. Put goals up, jumpers for goalposts. It's the old one. It truly was jumpers for goalposts, and just played as often as I could.
Clydebank Strollers, your first team.
Yeah. My mate who lived across the road. I wasn't playing football at this time. Would you believe I didn't have a team? The only team I played for was my school, and my mate who lived across the road, Brian Payton. There you go. I think it was Brian. Yeah. He came to me on a Saturday morning and he said, Andy, what are you doing this afternoon? I says, nothing. He says, listen, we're a bit short today. He says, do you want to come and have a game for us? I says, I don't mind. I said, grab my boots. He said, yeah, grab your boots. Come on. So I grabbed my boots. I went down. They played me. I scored a hat trick. Would you believe? Honestly, Tom, it's a true story. I scored the hat trick. They signed me on right after that, Clydebank Strollers. and we had a really good team. We ended up winning a big trophy at Kilbowie Park at Claybank. Yeah. Is it Kilbowie? Claybank?
I thought Shawfield was Clyde.
No, Shawfield's Clyde. Claybank was, I think it was Kilbowie. Yeah. But we at their ground, we played a big final and we went 3-2 and I managed to get a couple of goals that night as well. So that's when it all started again for me, was Claybank Rollers, because that's where scouts spotted me.
Yeah.
And started, taking notice.
So is that how Dundee spotted you then? You know, under the legendary Jim McLean was the boss then, but not Rangers, not Celtic, but Dundee United.
Yeah, it was a lad called Maurice Friel. He saw me play for Claybank Rollers, and he very quickly got on the phone to Jim McLean. He says, listen, I think I've found something special here. He said, you need to have a look at this kid. So Jim, being Jim, said, send him up. Now, I was painfully shy in those days. You're going to find that hard to believe in.
I am.
Yeah, I know. But I was a shy boy, Tom. I really was. And I was all right in company and I was all right playing football, because football was where I felt comfortable. Yeah. But I had to go on the train myself. Remember, I'd hardly been out of Glasgow.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably never been in a foreign holiday at this time. So I had to get on the train from Glasgow to Dundee, which sounds nothing, but for a kid who... Yeah. And with my boots under my arm, literally, get this station, find Tannadice, and walk through the front door, and I'm petrified. So I walk upstairs, and the secretary or the reception says, Andy Gray, I've come for a trial. Oh, yeah, and just go in that dressing room. I go into this dressing room, and this player's getting changed, and they don't know me from Adam, and I'm really petrified. I was nervous as you could be. We went out to the pitch, the main pitch, and he put me in the reserve team against the first team.
Wow.
Now, I'm just a baby, you know, playing against... You know, professional footballers.
Men.
Yeah, men. And I'm skinny as you like. I never had a kick, Tom. Never had a kick. They'd been as well playing you up front than me, I'm telling you. I never had a kick. And I was not surprised when Jim called me and he says, listen, Andy, thanks very much, but you know, we'll be in touch. Which meant we won't be in touch. Thankfully, Maurice Friel kept on him and kept phoning him saying, listen, Jim, you're making a mistake. You need to... How did you play him? How did he play? Well, I didn't show it. Jim told me, he said, for God's sake, Jim, play him in a game against kids his own age or slightly older.
Yeah.
You can't play him against people who have had 20 years experience as a professional or 10 years experience. He said, hey, play him and see what his true value will be like. So this time, I took my brother with me, Willie.
Yeah.
I thought, right, I'm not going myself. Willie will keep the calm. So Willie came with me and it was in a midweek and we played in a game and I played really well. And I scored. And this story, we went into Jim's office after that, and Jim was totally different this time round. And he said, yeah, I said, Andy, I've seen enough. I'd like to offer you a contract. So he says to me, here's the deal. It's £16 a week, of which six of that will go to your digs, because you'll be in digs. And if you get in the first team, your wages will go up to £34 a week. The numbers, I didn't care.
Didn't matter,
I was just saying, give me the pen. Hmm. Right, so he says, plus, he said, there's a bonus. There's a £20 signing on fee.
But a lot of dough for you then.
Yeah.
That was a lot of dough.
Oh, cool, it was a lot of dough. So, I didn't want to rush it. So I felt very mature. I said, do you mind if I have a chat with my brother before we decide? He went, of course, I'd expect nothing else, Andy. And he goes, I'll just give me a shout when you've had it. So he goes outside. So I turns to my brother, Willie, looking for words of wisdom from an adult, the patriarch of the family. I said, well, what do you think, Willie? He went, well, a tenner each doesn't sound bad to me, Andy. I said, what? He said, well, I've come up here with you. Surely I'm entitled to half your signing on fee. For what? He says, well, the advice I've given you. What advice? So I had to give him a tenner on my signing on fee, my big brother. So we signed and off we went, really. It was an amazing journey.
Do you remember your first game?
And my first game was, well, my debut was as a sub. And I was at Motherwell and I was sitting on the bench. We were getting battered.
Yeah.
And it was 3 or 4 nil. And I was just drifting. And there was about 20 minutes to go. And Jim McLean, he went, Andy... And I'd always been dreaming it. He said, yeah, but do you want to go on? I went, me? He said, do you want to go on? I said, oh, yeah, please. So off I got on, ran about for 20 minutes. Don't know if I kicked the ball or not. Can't remember. And then that was it. But then he played me in a League Cup tie. I think it was against East Fife at Tannadice in the midweek. That was my full debut. And we battered them. And I scored a header, surprisingly. Yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget. Andy Rowland smashed across from right towards the back post. And I must have been about 12, 13 yards out. And I just met this thing perfectly and put it in the top corner. And that was my first goal as a professional footballer. It was a great finish. It was arguably one of the best headers I've made, and it was the first one. But that was me off and running, beat East Fife. I basically then was never out of the team unless I was injured. And things just snowballed.
Well, it was just a couple of years later that Aston Villa came calling. How did that one happen?
Well, I think it was a couple of reasons. Jim McLean had come to me after 2 years, and in fairness to Jim, and before that season started, he says, listen, I'm going to have to sell you this year. And I've gone, what? He said, yeah. He said, I can't keep you here. He said, if I keep you here, I'll hold you back.
Wow.
He said, you're better than this.
What a good manager he is.
Well, he loved me. I liked Jim a lot. A lot of people criticise Jim McLean, but I would never have achieved half of what I achieved if he hadn't given me the first 2 years with him there. I know that. So, and he liked me and I liked him. So he says, no. He said, I can't keep you. And it was to his detriment. He said, you've got to go. And I went, okay. He said, so we'll play it anyway. I had no thought of leaving. I thought we'll just play if he said. And then I think what happened at Villa, and it was a combination, Keith Leonard, big Keith, got a really bad knee injury, remember?
Yeah, the big striker, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keith had a really bad knee injury. Villa had just got promoted. And Ron Saunders loved Keith because he was his type of player, big, strong, physical centre-forward. And for some reason, I was like the opposite. I mean, I was aggressive, but I wasn't powerful with it. I was skinny as anything. And I think that the scouts had seen me play, and Ron basically had bought me without seeing me. He never saw me play, Ron. He trusted the scouting report, and so they made an offer. And just, I think it was before a Celtic game. And the Friday training, and I'm training. Is it Friday? Yeah, Friday. And we're training, and what I used to do, Tom, if we're playing Celtic or Rangers, me and a guy called Jackie Copeland, big centre back, he lived in Paisley near Glasgow. I lived in Glasgow, and so Jackie used to drive me home. We used to go back to Glasgow there and then meet the guys at the ground, either Ibrox or Parkhead, on the Saturday. So that was the usual. Well, Jim was really nippy with me this Friday. He was chipping away at me. And I'm thinking, what's the matter with him? This is not like him. And he kept at me, and then he said to me, where are you going to be later? I said, I'm going to be at my mum's, where I always am.
Yeah.
Like, well, make sure you are. I'm thinking, I said, what have I done here? And I thought I was getting dropped. I thought he was preparing to drop me for some reason. And I went home, sat in my mum's house, phone went, Jim, right, be at Glasgow Airport 5 o'clock tonight. I said, why? He said, you're signing for Aston Villa. I went, who? He said, seriously. He says, you're signing for Aston Villa. I went, right. He says, so you've got to meet a couple of directors at the airport. You're all flying down. I went, okay. I came off the phone. I swear to God, Tom, this is terrible. I hate to say this, but my mum says, what's happened? I said, well, I think I've just been sold. She went, well, where is who to? I said, somebody called Aston Villa. She went, where do they play? I said, I've got no idea. I had no idea. Villa were in Birmingham. So I very quickly looked up. I says, my mum, we're going to Birmingham. She went, all right. So we flew down, met Saunders, Ron, and listen, it was a no brainer for me. The natural progression for a footballer in Scotland those days, if it was any good, was to come to South. So I was doing that at a team that had just got promoted. So it was a bit of a gamble in that respect because we didn't know how they were going to fare, but the next day, when I went to the ground, it was a local derby.
Oh, right. Was that your first, was it?
I wasn't playing. I hadn't signed early enough.
Yeah.
So they took me and I sat in the dugout, and the hairs on the back of my... When I walked out to walk along the track, and I thought, bloody hell. I mean, you remember, I'd played in front of like 10,000 at Tannadice most weeks. If you went to Ibrox or Parkhead, it was a big crowd. But, you know, this was compact Villa Park where they're right on top of you.
Yeah,
and there's about 50,000 in there that day. And it was, and I'm thinking, I wish I'd have signed early. But little Brian, little destroyed you that day, I think. We won 2-1. Pretty sure he did.
Both offside, I think.
Ah, you're joking. In your dreams, son. No. And I thought, I've got to get some of this. Yeah. And I can't wait for it to happen. But it wasn't a culture shock, but it was strange because I went from that to the next week.
Did you feed off that?
Oh, yeah. Loved it. Loved it. And I couldn't wait to be involved with the boys, to be involved in the team. And I had no idea what his thoughts were about whether he was going to play me from the start or whether I was going to play. I don't know. I had no idea because, as I said to you, I wasn't the most confident player. I always felt I had to prove something every week to stay in the team. Maybe whether I was right or wrong, but it stood me in good stead. And I never took getting selected for granted, ever. Wow. So I think the game I played was against Middlesbrough at Earson Park. So it was a complete culture shock from coming from a local derby at Villa Park to going up to Earson Park, and I played in a dull 0-0. It was a good introduction because I think I played against Stuart Bohm and Willie Madron. Yeah. They were too big, and I thought, wow. And me at 19, Tom. I mean, there wasn't an ounce of fat on me. I was just skinny. Yeah. But I had desire. I was competitive.
The right attitude, they call it.
The right attitude, yeah. But they were massive, and it gave me a little quick insight as to what life was going to be like as a centre forward. Because you know, they kind of kicked me from pillar to post, as they would.
But you got, I mean, you quickly, and I was around at the time to see that you quickly became a fan's favourite. One goal every two games. Mm-hmm. You won the League Cup, and the fans. And I know because I remember the newspapers. I remember the fans. Were devastated when you left. Why leave with that record?
I fell out with Ron Saunders. Quite simple. Yeah, quite simple. You know who I'm talking about. Peter White. You know Peter?
Yeah, Peter, journalist, yeah.
Yeah.
Still in touch with him. He lives in the Isle of Wight.
Isle of Wight. I spoke to Peter about a month ago. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a good lad. So Peter had been, if you remember the game, we played Barcelona, or we were playing Barcelona, remember?
Yeah.
And I missed the first leg because I had a thigh strain or something like that. And we were due to play them in the midweek in Spain. Mm-hmm. So the Sunday before the game, Saunders came into the training ground. He never ever did that. If you were injured, you were persona non grata for Ron. But he knew I was important to them. He thought I was important to them. And he came in the Sunday, which was really unusual. And I'm sitting there getting treatment. And he says, "How are you?" I says, "Yeah, I'm not bad." I said, "I think I'll be okay for Wednesday." He went, "No, not good enough." I said, "Sorry?" He said, "Not good enough." I said, "What do you mean it's not good enough?" He said, I need to know if you're fit today. I says, "Why? The game's not till Wednesday." No. Unless you can tell me you're fit to play today, I'm not taking you. Not only are you not playing, I'm not taking you.
Not taking you.
So I was standing there. I says, "Well, no, of course I'm not fit to play today. It's Sunday.
Yeah.
But I'll be all right for Wednesday." Nah. So he never took me. And we got beat 2-1. And I don't know. Maybe if I'd have played, we might have made the difference. Yeah. We might have.
Who knows?
Who knows? But he didn't. And on the way back, we had a load of journalists, including Peter White. They asked him, obviously the question was, "Where the hell is Andy?" Yeah, I don't want to talk about Andy. He's let me, he's let himself, he's let the fans down. And Peter White went, "What?" Now, this is somebody, me, who had allowed Ron Saunders to inject me in pretty much every part of my body.
When you'd been injured.
Injured to play. I remember coming to Port Vale, we played in an FA Cup tie at Villa Park, and I had a really bad ankle, and I was about 10 days away from being fit. And he came to me and he says, "Can you play?" I says, "I'm really struggling." He says, "Can you strap it up?" So I went out to the pitch and I came back in. I said, "I'm in agony." He says, "I need you to play." He said, I said, "Why? It's Port Vale.
Port Vale, for
God's sake." He says, "No, if they see the team list and you're not on it, it's going to give them a lift. And I just want to get your name on there." So I said, "Well, I'll try." So the physio taped me up so that I couldn't move my ankle. Yeah. It was just rigid. And I went out and for 45 minutes, Tom, I never had a kick really. We were winning 3-0 at half time, but so the game is over. But I missed the next 5 weeks because of that, the damage I did. But you see, he forgets all those things. So
that'd be cortisone, anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be cortisone and painkillers, yes. So I Peter told me about this about before the start of a season once, and I went, "What?" It might have been the next season. He said to me, "I'll never forget this, the conversation with Saunders." I went, "What conversation?" And he told me. So I went in to see Saunders and said, "Listen, I've heard it. Is this true?" And he kind of hummed and hawed. And I said, "I'll tell you what, you can do one." I said,
"Really?
The things I've done for you, the way I've put my body to go out and play for
and
you.
And your future."
Yeah, but I've never thought about my future at all. That was the last thing on my mind. I said, "And you accuse me of that?" I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm leaving. I want to move, right? And that's it. No, end of story. So, of course, he must have got, well, I didn't expect that. So I said, I'm not going to cause any problem. Just
not many stood up to him, though.
No, not many did, no, because he was that kind of coach. And listen, he'd done great for me. I'm not sitting here saying...
Great for Villa, to be fair.
Great for Villa, and he did brilliantly for me. He taught me an awful lot about being a centre-forward because he was himself. You know, so the little tricks of the trade, I'm not sitting here and saying Ron Saunders was all bad for me. The reason I left is I fell out with him because I lost respect for him and I couldn't go. And so we did that. So I just asked to move. And it went on and on. It dragged on. No one was coming in. Or maybe they were just knocking it back. And then we got a call from Doug Ellis when we were at training, me and Giddy, of all people. Giddy had fallen out with him as well. Yeah. He had fallen out with him. So we got a call at training, really strange. Could you and John Goodman come to Villa Park to the boardroom, please? So I've got to Giddy. Oh, okay then. So I got to Giddy, and as we're getting out the car, I said, listen, don't say anything, because you know what Giddy's like.
Yeah.
I says, let me do the talking.
He couldn't get quiet.
I says, don't say a word. Let's just see what they've got to say, absorb it, and then come out. Right. Promise me you'll not say anything. I won't say it, Andy, honestly. Right, good, well done. So we go in, we're sitting there, Doug Ellis, I think it was... Was Sir William still there? Dugdale? Sir William Dugdale?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly he would have been there.
Might have been, whoever it was. Anyway, three or four of them sitting there. They're obviously concerned because two of their best players want to leave. Mm-hmm. So they do come out with that. Says, right, it's quite simple. If we sack the manager, will you stay?
Wow.
I said, nah. I said, I'm not getting involved in that. No chance. Giddy went, I'll stay. I said to him, I told you to shut up. Giddy, I'll stay. So I says, no, sorry. I say, I'm not.
You'd made your mind up.
No, I wasn't going to be party to him losing his job because.
But the fans loved you. It must have been a wrench to leave Villa Park.
I never thought I would leave Villa.
Oh, right.
I really didn't. When I was there and I loved the Midlands, you know I did. Yeah. You know, it was my second home. I'd made so many friends here. And my family, my brother was down here, my mate was down here living with me, my brother was down living with us. I couldn't see myself leaving Villa. I really couldn't, Tom. No. But, you know, these things happen, and that's what happened. I had to go. And that was proved right in the end because, you know, what Ron did brilliantly, but, you know, the way he left Villa left a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah.
Really did, for what that club... He'd given the club plenty, but the club gave him plenty, gave him a platform, gave him an opportunity to resurrect his career, really, as a coach. Yeah. And then to leave them in that manner and to go to your lot as well was a double whammy. You know, it was wrong of him.
But,
wrong of him.
But nevertheless, you didn't have to leave the Midlands because it was Wolves that came calling this time. You know, and was that a good move for you?
It was at the time. Now, in hindsight, what happened in the last 2 years was trauma. The club went into liquidation. You know, there were various owners coming and going. The ground was a shambles. Yeah. But for 2 years, I mean, it was a terrific move. I mean, John Barnwell and Richie Barker were young, bright, you know, up and coming. Had signed good players. I mean, John was... He signed me... Mickey Thomas...
Emlyn Hughes, you had, didn't you?
Emlyn was there.
Yeah.
But, what was his first name? From Everton, the winger. Thomas. Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas.
He signed Dave. He came to me and says, listen, I'm going to sign you, Dave Thomas. I went, oh, God, thanks. Because I remember watching him in Latchford, and he must have crossed so many balls for Bob Latchford, and just to score goals. I thought,
you thrive off that.
Oh, yeah, I was like that. Well, brilliant. And he signed him, and Emlyn was there, and we had people like Kenny Hibbett, John Richards, Willie Carr. Great players. I mean, really top professionals, Tom. Can't tell you how good they were. Their attitude and everything was really good. And a couple of good youngsters coming through as well. So it looked as if it was going to be really bright. But, you know, and for 2 years, won the League Cup, finished, I think, fourth in the league.
You scored the goal, of course, in the League Cup final.
Yeah, couldn't miss it, could I, really? I think even you, that. Well, you might not have reached it. You might not have got there as quick as I did. It was a tap-in, which it was great. And we all thought we were going to go on there, really did. Because I had memories of winning the League Cup with Villa and how we moved up a notch or two from there. And I thought we could do the same, but for various reasons, you know. I don't think Barney was ever the same after his accident.
Yes, of course. The accident.
And then they changed him.
Ian Greaves. Was it Ian Greaves?
Ian Greaves was brilliant, in fairness. He was only there a short time, but I loved Greavesy. He was old school. But And then, great.
Then Hawkins, Graham Hawkins.
Graham Hawkins, yeah. Too big for Graham.
The job.
I thought, the job, aye. You know, he was keen. He'd come from Hereford.
He was a nice man as well.
He was a lovely guy. Hereford, I think he was at. Yeah. He'd done really well. I think the job was too big for him. Mm-hmm. And it was tough for 2 years. And we were up and down. We'd got relegated, then got promoted again. And it looked like we were getting relegated again. So look at my son trying to ring me. I'm going to tell him. You tell him on his Facebook not to bother you again when you're working.
but you know, that you cost a lot of money to go to Wolves. Mm-hmm. But you didn't cost a lot of money to go to Everton, which was strange, really. Yeah. You'd scored a cup final goal, and yet you went for $250,000, which was a snip for Everton.
But listen, Tom, I have to tell you, when I got to that age, I was what, when would that be, 83? So I'm coming up, 28? And I'm thinking, I honestly thought I wasn't sure if I could do it again. I really felt like, yeah, I'd had a couple of bad years at Wolves, really bad years. Not really bad, not great. We all struggled. And I just thought, you know what, maybe that's it for me. And sometimes you need a shot in the arm. Everybody does. Whoever walk of life. And, you know, when Everton came in and bid that, the only reason that Wolves accepted it is because they were in liquidation. Yeah. And of course, I was an asset, so-called asset. And they got what they could. And, you know, to be honest, what happened there at Goodison was beyond all of our wildest dreams.
Frightening, the success you had. It was under Howard.
It was the speed of it.
Yeah.
You know, because when I joined them in November, I think, they were sort of bottom six. Mm. So, and then by the end of that season, we were sort of top eight and had won the FA Cup. And had got beaten in the final of the League Cup by Liverpool. Yeah. So within 6 months, it flipped on its head. And suddenly this was a team that had some amazing footballers in it. I mean, I look through that team and I think, wow, it was special.
I still speak to one or two, Sharpie and Ronnie Goodless and people like that.
Well, Ronnie wasn't on our side. No, but Ronnie was the one before.
He was around it. He was the man that you always... He knew everything about Everton. But Sharpie... Yeah. Was a good player to play with.
Sharpie was brilliant. I mean, he was young when I went up there. He'd have been about 22. And I've always said, if people talk to me, tell me about Graham Sharp. And I say, well, when I got there, Graham was a scorer of great goals. He wasn't a great goal scorer.
Yeah.
And there's a difference,
yes,
obviously.
There is. Yeah.
And I think what we did, all of us, I'd like to think Sharp would say I helped him, was turn Graham into not just a scorer of magnificent goals, but a 30 goals a season man.
Yeah.
And that was a difference in those couple of years. Graham went from being just a great scorer of great goals, and people would go, wow, what a goal that was. But he'd maybe only get 10 a season, 15. Mm. Suddenly he was getting 30 a season. And that's the, that
and
was
now an Everton
point.
Legend.
Yes, and rightly so. Peter Reid, what a
really,
man.
Really, what a player he
what
was.
What a man, yeah. We had a, I'm going to see him Friday, actually, in London. I'm going to meet him in London for, that could be messy.
Ask him about VAR.
Oh, God, no, he's like me, he hates it. I know, I don't like it, I'm not a fan.
But at Everton, though, you were... I mean, I remember Everton fans again, and people tell me, because it's a club I like, when you left and Lineker came in, the fans were up in arms, man.
Yeah. I mean, football moves on, and I was not stupid enough to not realise that. It was 1985, the summer of 85.
Yeah.
I was approaching 30. I'd had a bad knee, but I'd had two amazing seasons with Everton. And then however,
European final goal scorer.
Yeah. I mean, that was amazing. Now, to be part of the only team ever to win a European trophy for Everton still,
yeah,
you know, 30 years later, is quite a thing for all those boys who played in that night.
How big a club is Everton?
Massive. Massive. As big as you want it to be. And hopefully the new stadium will take shape and will get finished. It's a massive club. It's a brilliant club as well. Yeah, David Moyes was quite right when he named it the People's Club, because that's what it is. It's a magnificent club. I mean, I adored my time there. And I still have...
I had
a short time there. And for somebody who was there probably just less than 2 years, Tom, it's amazing how highly they think of me still, which is...
That's my point I was making. Yeah, the fans revere players.
Yeah, they do. They do. Absolutely, 100%. Like nothing on earth. They're brilliant. They're a big club, and I'm hoping with the owners they now have and the money that's behind them and the new stadium hopefully being built that... It won't be long before they're back. Yeah, but we'll see. I'm not fussed about the new manager, I have to be honest with you.
But then it's back to the Midlands. Yeah. And the Midlands was your place, because it, this time it was West Brom. That was a big run. Mm-hmm. And I was a great pal of yours. Yeah. But unlike the first time he was there, they were struggling a little bit this time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd gone back to Villa, first and foremost, in between.
Oh, sorry, yes, you'd gone back to Villa in 85.
Yeah, I went back.
But not the best of times there then.
No,
I shouldn't have gone.
I shouldn't have gone.
Graham Turner signed you?
No, Graham got rid of me. And now. Oh, Graham Turner. Yeah, sorry. I said Graham Taylor.
Graham Taylor got rid of me. And in between, you had Big Caesar.
Yeah, yeah, Billy McNeil was a disaster. And Ron Wiley did it for a while. Ron, yeah. He was caretaker manager for a while. It was a traumatic time at the club. It really was turmoil.
It was only a few years after winning the European Cup.
I know, 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I know, but it was a traumatic time. I remember when Graham came in, Graham Taylor, and he took me into his office, and I sat down, and he went, I'm going to have to sell you. I went, really? He said, yeah. I said, why? He says, the players like you too much. He says, what? He said, the players like you too much. I think you've got too much power over the players. And I kind of thought, well, you know, I said, well, Graham, I'm the kind of player that I hope, with my attitude and what I do, how I go about it, you want at your club.
You could help the manager.
Yeah. He said, no. No, too much. I said, okay. He said, I've had a bid from Birmingham City. Can you believe it?
No.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. He said, and I looked across the table, I said, what? He said, you honestly think I'm going to go to Birmingham City? He went, well, I thought I'd let you know. I said, well, think again. I said, no. No, sorry. I'd rather give up than play for Birmingham City.
Hey, see, all the great career you've had and the big chance you missed.
Yeah, I missed it, yeah. God blame me, can you imagine it? No thanks. But that was it. Big Ron phoned me and says, come and give me a hand. I said, love to. And I went over and I enjoyed that year I had with Big Ron, you know, at the Baggies, and we managed to keep them in the league.
Yeah, he stayed up.
Because they really were struggling.
Yeah.
And got a few goals and it was nice, because I kind of wondered where I'd be going from there, whether it'd be into coaching. Maybe Big Man had a vision of me, as he did later, you know, coaching and getting in with him. So I didn't know. So I thought, well, that's me then. I'm in my 30s now, so... You know,
did you think it was the end then?
Yeah, pretty much. I thought that would be my last move. I was still in the Midlands, which, as you know, had pretty much been my home, apart from 2 years in Merseyside. And I thought that would be it. And then the big man called me, Big Ron called me, the beginning of the next season. He says, right, he says, who have you always wanted to play for and you've never had the chance? So I didn't want to say Rangers, did I? I'm not going to say that. So I went, I said, bugger me, Ron, I said, have Real Madrid come in for me? He says, you stupid twat. You mean, he says, your knee's hanging off, you're 30 odd years of age. He said, no, Sue's been on the phone.
Graham Sinise.
I said, tell him I'm on the way. And in fairness, it was like the cherry on the icing on the top of the cake. It's like you being told you're going to play for Birmingham City.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That was your club, wasn't
that's
it?
Yeah, that's my team.
I'm not being, even at that age, with your knees and all that. You won things.
Yeah, we did. It was the season of the first 9 in a row. And I'm really proud to have been part of that now. I mean, that's historic. All the players who took part in that. And that was the first one. That was the first league title. Mm-hmm. And we won the League Cup as well. And got beaten in the final with Celtic. The Scottish Cup. Wee Joe Miller, I think, scored a little.
What was it like walking out of Ibrox?
Amazing. Amazing. Because, I'll tell you why, Tom. It's because when I walked out of Ibrox, and most of the time I was sub... with Davy Cooper. I love Davy.
What a player he was,
by the way. Talk to Ruud Hullett, right? Yeah. And you ask Ruud Hullett, who's the best player you've ever seen? Ruud Hullett.
Davy Cooper. Ruud Hullett. Wow.
Yeah.
Not Jimmy Johnston.
There's an act. Get off. Davy Cooper was magnificent. I loved him. And I loved his company. But we would play, so I'd be running up and down to get warmed up a lot of the time. And all the punters, like, of course they knew I'm a Rangers fan, right? My family's all Rangers. So they used to be shouting, Andy, give us a song. Sing us one of the songs, Andy. And I'm going, trying to warm up here, for God's sake.
And they wanted you to sing the sash.
And all that, yeah. Like, sing us a sash, Andy. Don't do that anymore. So it was brilliant, Tom. Honestly, it was a cherry on the icing on the top of the cake.
You couldn't have ended a career better,
no,
could you?
No, and my family then, I could take them all round Ibrox and into all the sacred places that they'd only ever read about. Yeah. Up the marble staircase, into the boardrooms, into the trophy rooms.
It's funny enough, you know, Andy, I was talking to Willie Johnson and he was saying that's just like you about Rangers, that same.
Yeah, Willie was great. Yeah. Yeah, Max, he's my father-in-law's favourite player because he was Rachel's dad's a Baggies fan. They're all Baggies fans, and he loved Willie Johnston. Oof. And I took him up to Ibrox the summer before the pandemic. I went to watch a pre-season game. And I took Alan up there, and my father-in-law, and I went into one of the lounges, and Willie was there. Yeah. And I went, "Oh, Willie, you have to come through." He said, "Why?" I said, "My father-in-law," I said, "he just adores you. He never stops talking about Willie Johnston playing for the Baggies. Come, please come through and talk to him." The wee man came through, little bud came through, and my father-in-law had his picture taken with him, had a chat with him, and it was brilliant for him. Just yeah, bud was great.
Funny as anything. Yeah, and still the only man in the history of the game to be sent off at gunpoint. But at gunpoint, when he played in America, after he kicked the referee, and he wouldn't go, so the police came on and arrested him. But that's another story. But tell me why a player of your stature dropped into the conference, with all due respect to the conference, but you dropped into the conference of Cheltenham. Was that a relationship thing with Jim Barron, perhaps?
Yeah, it was. It was also, Tom, a mate of mine, a guy called Andy Melvin, who pretty much set up Sky Sports in the early days. He was the producer, and he called me that summer after I left Rangers, and I had no idea what I was going to do. You know, there's never a more sobering thing in a footballer's life, and the only thing that would probably stop it being sobering for people like Jack Grealish, I'm looking it up there on the wall, and others, is the fact that they have enough money not to worry about what they do. But in my days, you didn't. It wasn't like that. You always had to plan for a future. I hadn't, because I just thought I'd play football forever. And I'm sitting there thinking in the summer, what do I do now? I was getting married. I didn't have a club. And I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell do I do now? Mm. So this lad called Andy Melvin called me and said, "Listen, there's a satellite station starting British Sky Broadcasting.
That's right.
Next February.
Yeah.
I want you to be part of it."
B Sky, that's what we call it, B Sky.
Yeah. And I said, "Well, that sounds good." And I thought to myself, right, what am I going to do from now to February?
Got you.
And then Jim called me, who I'd obviously known for
top
years.
Top man, Jim.
Yeah, I'd known Jim for years. And he was at Cheltenham. And he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm not doing anything, Jim, till February. Then I'm going to work with television." He went, "Do me a favour." I said, "What?" He said, "Come and play for us." He says, "I'll sort you out. You know, you'll get paid well, but it'll be great for the city, and it would be great for me, and good for the club to have a high-profile player come down." So I said to him, "I'd love to. I've got nothing to do for 6 months." So I went and played for them, trained on a Tuesday and a Thursday down at Cheltenham, went down, joined in, mucked in with the lads, went and played, enjoyed it, had fun. And then February came, and I had to leave, and off I went on the punditry journey.
But just before then, 10 years of Scotland international. I think three managers, Willie Ormond, Ali McLeod, the legendary Ali McLeod, and Jock Steen. Mm-hmm. So, was it like?
Fergie.
And did you play for Fergie? Because
Fergie left me out of the World Cup in 82.
Did he?
Aye. 86, sorry.
That was my first World Cup.
86?
82.
82.
Yeah.
Spain, that's right. Yeah. I mean, no, yeah, Willie Ormond gave me my first cap, and
how proud were you?
Oh, busted out of the shirt. Yeah, I mean, that's just you know, if you're a kid from Drumchapel, you don't kind of think of these things. You're going to play for your country and score for your country. And my disappointment is that I never got to a World Cup. I don't have many disappointments.
Why was that? Because I think Ali McLeod didn't take you to Argentina.
No,
You never went to any World Cup. No. I mean, and yet I think the one time you scored goals just before they left for the World Cup, you still didn't go.
Yeah. I mean, in 72, I was 74, sorry, I was too young. I'd had a year with Jim McLean, and there was a talk of me going because I had such a big year in Scottish football, but I think the offer was too young. I was only, 70, it was only 19, 18. I'd only been 18. So the offer was too young. There's absolutely no doubt in my own head, my own mind, that in 78 I should have gone. I'd just been, the season after, I'd just been voted double player of the year in England. And yet, Ali McLeod, and there's a lovely story with Big Ron. And he told me about it years later, and I didn't know this. The very last game of the season, I'd been injured a bit that season, but I'd still played about 40 games and I'd scored 20-odd goals. Mm-hmm. You know, I was still scoring goals for fun. Played the Baggies at the Hawthorns, the last game. Mm-hmm. And Ron said to me, years later, he said, I meant to tell you this story, Andy, about that last game when you played us at Hawthorns. I said, yeah, I remember. He said, well, Ali McLeod came to watch you. I said, oh. He said, came in my office and I was talking to him and I said, so you down to see wee Bud? Well, he was playing, really,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
He said, well, Bud's in. He said, I've just come to have a look at Andy Gray just to make my mind up about whether he comes or not. And Ron said, I said to him, I don't think you'd be disappointed. Ron was a big fan of mine, wasn't he?
Massive fan of yours.
So we won 3-0. We absolutely battered them. And I gave John Whelan and Ali Robertson a torrid time. I didn't
and that
score.
Was tough to do,
but that was tough. But I used to enjoy playing against the two
Did
boys.
You?
Oh, I loved it. I always thought they were more worried about me than I was about them at that time. So Ron says, so he came into my office just before he went back up the road. So he walked through the door and he sat down. I went, well, that's an easy decision for you now, Ali, isn't it? He says, and he kind of chuckled and he went away. And Ron says, so I thought, well, that's easy.
He's in.
Yeah. He's got to take him. He can't not take him in this form. So I was sitting in a wine bar at Five Ways. Where would that? Which one would that have been?
That was the Plum...
Maxwell Plums.
Maxwell Plums,
might have been that. Sitting there...
Maxwell Plums.
Sitting there with a mate of mine, two mates of mine. And the squad was getting announced, as it did in those days. You never got told before. You just had to find out. So he's getting champagne ready. He says, let's have a glass of champagne, celebrate. I said, no. I had a bad feeling, Tom. I had a bad feeling. I don't know why. I had a bad feeling. And he went round the back. He said, I'll go and check. Go and get a radio and I'll check. And as he walked back round the bar, I knew I wasn't in it.
You knew?
I knew. He's looking at his face. He said, you're not in the squad, you're in the standbys. I said, standbys? Yeah, I won't be standing by anywhere. I'm off. I'll be on holiday. So I was gutted in 78. I mean, truly gutted. In 82, again, I'd had a couple of bad years at Wolves, but I played in most of the knockout games, the group stages. I played in so many games to qualify for the World Cup and yet never went. 82 was a funny one. And in 86, after what had happened to Everton, I thought I might just get one last chance. But I had such a bad season when I came back to Villa.
Right.
But I'd still been in all the squads. I'd still been playing in the group matches. And that was the year Jock died.
Yes.
You know, and I was sitting there at Wales. I was sitting beside Jock.
When he was on the bench? When he collapsed
with a heart attack. I was sitting there, And... You know, we were doing that game. We won that game. I think David Cooper scored the penalty that got us through. This is what I'm saying about being in the squads. So I was in that group, right? That was the last game we played. Won it. We're going to the World Cup. Yeah. I'm thinking, last chance I'll go. So Jock passed. Sadly, Jock passed. Fergie took over. Yeah. Fergie phoned me and said, I'm not taking you. I was devastated. So there were various reasons why I never went. It's the only blot that I could see in 20 years or 17 years that I played. It's the only blot. And I'm gutted that I never went to a World Cup. But Ryan Giggs never went to a World Cup, you know, and Ian Rush never went to a World Cup.
But for me, it was the 78 one. I thought you were at that time, Ali Tartan Army. Yeah. Everybody thought they could do well. And I thought you were, like everybody else, I thought you were a shoo-in.
I thought it was a shoo-in. I have to be honest, it's not being big-headed, you know me. I thought it was a shoo-in, without a shadow of a doubt. And the fact that he never took me was it was mind-boggling.
We did have some fun because you going up on the coaches to the Scotland games. You remember all the fun we had on them with Jimmy Calderwood and all the other lads. Oh my days!
Funny about Ali McLeod, because the first international after we got back from the 78 World Cup. Yeah. Guess what I did? I played.
No, didn't you feel like going?
Yeah, I played. Austria. Played Austria away. Played and I scored.
Oh, that makes it worse. That would make it worse.
Yeah.
Although you do prove a point, don't you?
Well, a little one, but you know, it was just, I felt this, you know, it was one of them, you did feel it sticking two fingers up and saying, like, you know, sorry, what? You picked me now.
You'd won everything. You'd won everything as a player. That was the one little thing that playing in the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, perhaps the managers will have had more regrets. You tried a little bit of coaching with Big Ron at Villa. Didn't last too long because you'd already got the TV deal sorted out. Did you... Were you aware of how easily you took to being a pundit?
No.
Because you immediately caught all the fans' attention.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the thing about me is that I've always said, if I'm given a job or I'm doing a job, I'll do it to the best of my ability, right? There's no point in doing something if you don't give it everything. I did as a footballer, and I thought, right, I've got this. And Keezy will always tell you, he laughs about it. He said, I always thought you had a chance, Andy. He says, when the first day you turned up for a meeting, you came in with your briefcase and all your stuff as if prepared. You were ready to go. Yeah. You're ready to go. Yeah. And I thought, he's got a chance. And Keezy had been a journalist for a long time. Yeah. And I thought, right, if I'm going to have a go at this, I'm going to have a go at it. I had a great mentor. I mean, in the same way Jim McLean was amazing for my football career, Andy Melvin was amazing for my TV career. Yeah. Without his guidance, again, you know, I couldn't have achieved anything at all without him guiding me through it all. You know, I used to talk about it a lot, and he'd say, what do you want? He said, well, listen, don't tell me what I can see. Famous statement from him to me. Yeah. Tell me what I can't see. No, tell me what I can't see. I know it was a good cross. I know it was that. Tell me why it was. And we worked on that. And listen, we were given a blank canvas, me and Keezy, and it was amazing. It was amazing to be part of that. In the beginning,
we all loved your blackboard and we loved all that. Funny, some of the managers
somebody
didn't.
Somebody sent me a picture. Somebody sent me a picture as they tend to do last week, pal of mine, and it was of me, George Best, and Rodney Marsh, in the book room.
Yeah,
what we called that little show I did.
The little show,
and it was like a mock-up dressing room, and there's this Abuto Oil picture in front of us with the counters, and I'm sitting there with George and Rodney, and I'm thinking. I thought back, and I thought, yeah, that's kind of where it all started. And I remember Andy Melvin coming to me. We'd been in Glasgow doing a game. I think I was playing for Rangers, so I was doing both gigs. We were up watching Rangers. And we're sitting in the Holiday Inn in Glasgow. And there's about four or five of us, and there's beer, loads of beer bottles on the table. So he said to me something about, see the difference between a back four and a back three and what have you. How does that work? And I went, well, here, come here. And I took the bottles, and I've done that. And he logged it. So about 12 months later, after we'd settled and the TV thing was going well and Sky had taken over BSB and it was now One, he said to me, come here. He said, remember that night in Glasgow? And I said, yeah. He said, I want you to put that on television. I said, what, with beer bottles? He went, you stupid twat, not with beer bottles. He says, no, like in a dressing room, I want you to have a table and I want you to talk to people. And we came to the conclusion that, as well, that it was no point getting Premier League managers in. They're not going to tell you anything.
No.
What we decided to do was get managers, good managers and good players and ex-players from the lower leagues who would talk to you. Like Glenn Hodder was brilliant to talk to. Glenn was at Swindon, I think, at the time. So he came on. He was magnificent. I remember Bobby Moore, the late, great Bobby Moore. Bobby came in, sat with me, Cantona. I've sat and did a boot room.
These are massive names.
Yeah, George Best, Rodney Marsh, anybody, you name it, they were on it. And it was just moving little counters and talking the game. And he said, that was it. And that was his little baby.
But for us, the fans, that was our first insight into what really goes on.
Yeah, it was. And I used to get coaches and chairman from the Premier League coming to me and saying, Andy, will you stop fucking giving away our secrets? I'm saying, sorry, I'm paid to do that. I'm paid to look at a corner and say, well, have a look at this because this is how they work this corner. Stop giving their secrets away, they used to say.
10 years you had, and we all did it. We all, you had your sayings, take a bow, son. Yeah, we all had that. And, I mean, you became almost as big as you were as a player.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't know about that. But no, I mean, again, you see that we loved it.
It was massive.
It was massive. It was huge. And we did game after game after game after game. It was relentless. But I would rather have done that. I would rather have been part of that. I mean,
did you feel you were part of the game still?
Oh, well, it's... Yes and no. I found it difficult at first to criticise because...
Because you'd been there, hadn't you?
I just stepped out from being a player and a coach. So I'm very aware how difficult the job is, both jobs, playing and coaching. So it's easy to sit up there and go, that's rubbish, this is rubbish, that's crap, that's shit, get rid of that, that's garbage. Anyone can do that. My job was to be constructive with my criticism.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, you know, if you do that. And I tried to do that.
With an understanding of the game.
And I would say, listen, I've not been where Alex Ferguson is, right? So I can't criticise Alex Ferguson, but as a player, I can say that particular bit there, that was this. So I tried to do that, and I tried to work it that way, and talk about the game that way, and not complicate it. make it simplistic.
Yeah.
Right? Football is a simple game that people complicate. Coaches complicate it because they think they want to create something new. You know, you can't keep reinventing the wheel. And our game was brilliant. And I thought the Euros this year gave us back a bit of the game.
Give back a little bit of the game. Yeah,
yeah, instead of like watching keep ball sessions,
we
tend to do in the Premier League too often for me, we started to see teams actually going and trying to win it and being a bit more direct. And I thought it was refreshing. But we'll see what the Premier League brings.
10 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, you lost your job and it was most
publicised. Excuse me, 20 years.
20 years at Sky?
Yeah.
Was it?
Of course it was.
Oh dear. 1900, yeah. Well, either way, you lost your job in a much publicised, and without going into too much of that, I don't think many of us realised how hard it hit you, Andy.
No, that would be fair. It did. But when you're getting accused of being something you're not, Tom, it's very difficult. And when you have
the worst feeling in the world is being accused of something you didn't do.
It's not that you didn't do it. It's what allegedly you're supposed to be, you know. And
painting you as a particular
when
person.
When you have an industry or a group the size of News Corp chasing you and battering you on a daily basis, it's difficult to fight back, and it's hard to take it. And it flattened me, without a shadow of a doubt, it flattened me.
And that takes a lot to do to Andy Gray, because I mean,
it took me a long time to recover. It really did. You know, Rachel was brilliant for me then, my wife. Yeah. She was terrific.
Yeah, for good sake, you were Andy Gray. Bubbly, joke for every minute, quip then. And all. That's how everybody knew you.
No, I wasn't then. No, I was like, I met Keezy shortly after it, just as we were going on to Talk Sport. And that rescued us, basically. That rescued me.
That was Moz, wasn't it? Moz brought you in.
Moz did a lot to thank Moz for. Yeah. And a face of huge criticism, he thought, sodges, these boys are good and they're not what people say. But yeah, Keezy, I met Keezy just before it, and I hadn't seen Richard after that for about a month or so. And he met me and he looked at me and he went, Jesus Christ. He said, you just look like a skeleton with teeth.
Jesus.
Yeah, he said, I've never seen you as thin. It smashed me to bits that time and what they tried to do to me, what they did do to me. So it wasn't easy, but we got through it. And as I say, thanks to Moz D and everyone at TalkSport, who owe a huge debt to, and we'll always think of them in that way.
Your pal Peter Reid suggested that the whole thing, there was another agenda here that he suggested. I think he said that it may be more to do with a legal battle with you and the News of the World that Sky got involved in. You know, there might have been another agenda.
Yeah, I think there was. I mean, James Murdoch was head of Sky. He was head of Sky Sports. News of the World had been tapping my phone and having me under surveillance. That must have been boring.
Why?
God knows, Tom. I worked for this company for 20 years and they tap your phone. I couldn't get my head around it. And they follow me. So, it might have something to do with that. Yeah, it might have had something to do with that. They thought, maybe, let's get rid.
It's a difficult question, but there was I read somewhere as well that there were times in it that you got that low, you could have been suicidal.
Yeah, yeah.
So mentally, it must have destroyed you, this.
Oh, hugely. Yeah, you asked Rachel. Oh. There was a couple of times when I thought of going down the garden with a bottle of vodka and a few pills. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And luckily, I didn't. Because there is life after.
You don't think so at the time.
No,
but
you don't.
Has anybody since got to the stage of saying, Andy, we may have been a bit hasty, apologised or anything? Has that ever happened?
No, to be silly. I mean, Sky now is owned by Disney.
Yeah.
I mean, the power of the Murdochs across Sky has waned, I think, in that respect. No, but James Murdoch at the time, you know, there's lots talked about who did what. And James Murdoch made the decision, whatever way he made it, how he made it, I have no idea. Why he would do it after giving 20 years of what we gave to that company is beyond me. But, you know, he did what he did. He made the decision. And, you know, it wasn't just a decision. I mean, they come to me and said, listen, we think you should go now and we want to freshen it up. And
You'd been there as a player, hadn't you?
Thanks very much. Yeah. And, you know, you've been great for the company. Here's a nice little nest egg. Don't work for anybody for 2 years and
Let's do it properly.
Yeah. It would have been the right way to do it. But they decided to go the other way and try and destroy us.
Blacken your character.
Yeah, totally. They tried to make us not work again. who tried to stop TalkSport's employing us.
Did they really?
Yeah, they did.
You did.
So
Andy Gray has always bounced back.
Yeah, yeah.
And you bounce back now, being sports in Doha, Qatar. I mean, you've been there some time now, and a huge audience, and doing what you love.
Yeah, 8 years, going into the ninth year in Qatar. If you'd have said that to me 10 years ago, I'd have laughed at you and thought, Qatar for 8 years, no chance. But it's been great. The country's been great for us, looked after Keezy and I, and so many of the players that want to come and visit us. In fact, I texted John Terry earlier today just to wish him all the best.
Yeah.
And just say, I hope you enjoyed Villa, and, you know, good luck in your next thing. And John, and I woke up this morning, there was a text, thanks, Andy, and hopefully I'll get a chance to pop up and see you guys this year.
Wow.
See, there's so many, you know, Ruud Gullit. Ruud's always in there.
Is he?
We did the Euros there, Tom.
Good grief.
And I was sat at a desk, me and Keezy. He's at one end, I'm at the other. And in between us was Peter Schmeichel, Arsene Wenger, Ruud Gullit, and Gianfranco Zola.
Don't come any bigger. What a nice man, Gianfranco.
Oh, he's the nicest man in the world.
Yeah,
he is the nicest man in the world. The only thing he talks to me about it a lot, and he says, I say, well, what's the worst thing you ever did?
Don't start.
He says, sign up for Birmingham City.
I still keep in touch with him.
Yeah,
he's an absolute top man. But we got the World Cup coming up there. In your backyard.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of stuff written about it. What can we expect? Is it going to be a good one?
I think it's going to be a great World Cup. I really believe that, Tom. It's compact. I mean, I can almost see, I think, from my apartment balcony, I can see, I think, four of the grounds. The clubs will come in. The temperatures in November, December are perfect. Probably a high of maybe 24, 25 during the day and drop into maybe 17, 18 at night.
Perfect.
In the night games. The stadiums are state-of-the-art, all of them.
Really?
They've built seven new stadiums, plus they've upgraded the national stadium. So there's eight new stadiums where we await everybody, from 45,000-seater to 70,000-seaters.
Wow.
The infrastructure's all in place. The rail network's been built. The roads have all been done.
All the stadiums local, are they complete?
Yeah. From the centre of Doha, the furthest you would travel to a ground, time-wise, in a car, would, I think, be 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
25 minutes. Yeah, there's a difference. I think I've been the most northern to the most southerly is 45 kilometres or something like that. That's it. So it's going to be a...
Great for players.
For players.
And teams, yeah.
There's a couple of things. The players will be fresh because it's November and it's not, you know, June, July or May when they're all knackered. So they're going to be fresher. They're not going to be travelling on the plane. The only two plane journeys they'll make is the plane journey in and the plane journey out. The other time, whatever hotel you book, if you're there for the 4 weeks, you'll be in that hotel for 4 weeks.
The training facilities.
Facilities are all built. They're all built. Fan parks have been built all over. There'll be lots of fan parks being put in the desert. There's hotels going up at a rate of knots. There'll be cruise liners offshore for people to work there. Yeah, they've pretty
so
much.
So why is it getting so bad publicity then?
I don't know. But the bad publicity only seems to come from the British press. It doesn't really come from anywhere else. I don't know why, because as far as I can tell, England didn't bid for 2022. They bid for 2018 and didn't get it. So why they keep on at Qatar, I don't know. And a lot of them criticise Qatar without ever having been there, Tom.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so listen, they are what they are. It's you know, they're a Muslim country. They're not us. Yeah. In that respect, so they have their laws, which as a visitor you respect.
You abide by.
Yeah, same. When somebody comes to this country,
you
expect them to abide by the laws. So they have that, and that's fine. But I think there's no one I know, Tom, who's been there, who maybe they have, and I've not talked to them, right? But anyone I have spoken to, and any guest that's come in, they can't wait to come back again.
Really?
Oh, they can't. They love it. They're sitting there. They're sitting in line in a 5-star hotel. We play a bit of golf with the boys. And we had Jason McAteer and Paul Robinson in for the World Cup as well. The boys came over and we played a lot of golf with the boys, and it's, they just enjoy it. They just really enjoy it and the way it's about. And it's all, we're a bit laid back. We're not as, you know, we don't have the way we used to do it, a way I used to do it at Sky, was, you know, delve into everything.
Yeah.
We're more conversationalists now.
Yeah.
You know, we want to hear Arsene Wenger talk.
Yeah.
We want to hear Ruud Gullit.
Hear their thoughts.
Their thoughts. We want to talk to Gianfranco Zola about Italy and, you know, why. You know, we don't always want to show bits of VT that don't mean anything.
Yeah.
They'd rather have conversations.
These guys have been there and done it.
Of course they have. Of course they have. And Peter Schmeichel was magnificent. I mean, that's the first time I've spent a bit of time with Peter. Yeah. Spent 2 weeks with him. He was brilliant.
Steve Bruce told me he's a great character.
He's brilliant. I liked him. And he's not short of an opinion, Peter.
Oh, that's what you want.
Not short of an opinion. But he was great. Went out for dinner a few times with him. And he's I really like Schmeichel. He's a top man.
Andy, do you miss the game? Do you miss the dressing room? Do you miss all that?
Nothing replaces playing, Tom. Mm-hmm. I said that from day one. And anyone who's playing now will only realise that when they stop playing. Nothing can give you the rush that you got as a player.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No.
Not a thing in future life. All these players that are playing now, yeah, they're all going to earn potfuls of money. And, you know, that's lucky. They're so lucky. The guys that are playing now, so lucky in that respect. But the one thing that money won't buy them is the feeling they got when they played football or when they went to a dressing room, get stripped for training and be with the boys. You can't replicate that in normal life. It doesn't work.
You were a tough opponent for anybody. Who was your toughest opponent?
I actually enjoyed playing against lots of players. I never really didn't enjoy it. Who gave me a tough time? Dave Watson gave me a tough time, the old Sunderland Man City centre back. Dave was tough. I always thought Todd and McFarlane at Derby were
tremendous.
A class apart.
Yeah, tremendous.
Right. Kenny Burns and I had we had a few ding dongs when he was at the Blues. Kenny and I remember it was one of my first games. And the ball's come up to me, and no surprise, Kenny's playing centre back, and he comes right through the back of me. Up I went, poof, welcome to the game, tackle, picks me up. Hey, I said, okay then, is that how it is? So next minute, he goes to clear one, and I just leave my foot there, and he kicks the ball with my boot, bang, his ankle goes, and he went, oh, you little bastard, you're weird. I said, Kenny, it's quite simple. You kick me, I'm kicking you back. Other than that, if we want to get on with it, let's get on with it. And you know him and I never kicked each other again after that. We just got on with it. Yeah, respect. And I remember playing my first derby. And Big Joe Gallagher, he stuck one on me at the halfway line. We're defending.
Allegedly
my arse. And he stuck one. I'm watching the game develop there and he tapped me in the shoulder and I turned round and he just went... And I've gone...
No VAR, nothing.
No, nothing. No cameras, nothing. Joe just giving me one.
Did you get your arm back?
Oh, yeah, I scored. But I remember Ron Saunders, is what I'm talking about. And I remember I got up and Ron Saunders is on the touchline looking at me and he's got his elbow up and he's pushing it back as if to say, give him one.
Yeah.
Give him one. I'm thinking, well, I didn't do things like that in Scotland. You know, I didn't think of that, but I very quickly had to think about it in England. That was for sure. No, he was tough. They were tough.
Who's the best you played with?
Doug Leash.
Oh, what a player.
Doug Leash at Scotland. He was... Oof. Kenny was...
How good was he from a player's perspective?
Well, everyone always says that Kenny was ahead of his time. He was ahead of his time, but he could do everything.
Really?
I mean, he wasn't the quickest. You know, you talk to people who play with Kenny. He's quick enough.
Quick brain, though.
Lightning brain. Great feet. Brilliant touch of a football. Could head it, but didn't really depend on heading. He was just... I mean, I guess Rushy would say... You know, it helped Rushy having Kenny Dalglish playing alongside him. Kenny was brilliant. I love playing for Scotland with Scotland with him. He was just a class apart. At club level, I mean, who would have been the best? There's so many good players. I mean, Brian Little was brilliant for me when I first
arrived. What a player he was.
He was a sensational player. He was brilliant for me. He must have created so many chances and goals for me in my first few years at Villa and English football. Reedy was brilliant. Everton, yeah. Love Reedy.
Another love great
him.
Player.
Love him. Oof. He was magnificent. Souness was brilliant for Scotland. That player Sue he was.
Did you play with Souness?
Yeah, at Scotland.
Oh, for Scotland?
For Scotland, yeah, we played for Scotland.
I've been fortunate to meet him a few times and he's great company to
He's very good company. Again, yeah. Graham's another visitor, was a regular visitor to Qatar. Yeah, he's
now,
a regular.
Another one. Don't pull in, like yourself, don't pull any punches.
No,
this is the way it is.
Yeah.
You must have played with some nutters. Who's the craziest?
Probably John Burridge. Budgie. Remember Budgie?
Budgie.
You have to. It has to be Budgie. There's no one crazier than Budgie. I can remember when we both went to Wolves. We ended up at Wolves together. I'd gone and then he came after me. And I said, yeah, you can come and stay with me until you get your your place sorted out. So he was staying with me. And I used to have like two sofas faced each other with a fire. And on a Friday night, he'd give me a bowl of apples and oranges. And we'd be lying watching the telly on the sofa, and he'd have his goalie's gloves on across on the other sofa.
Get away.
Swear to God. And then every now and again, I had to lob an orange or an apple onto the sofa, and he'd cut you. Yeah, you nearly cut the budgie there, so you're there. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? I'm throwing apples and oranges for him to catch on a Friday night. Oh, he was mad. Budgie was mad.
Absolutely. We're coming to the end now. Your favourite goal you've scored?
Oh.
Wow. I know you said that header that you got, your first goal was it?
The
far post was special.
I tell you what, a goal I scored, and I'm so disappointed it wasn't on camera or whatever. I scored a goal for, I think it was Scotland was playing for, and Kenny played it into me, and I think it was voted goal of the season in Scotland at the time. And it was just a little chip from Kenny Dalglish from right side, and I was about the left side of the D.
Yeah.
And I just took it in my chest and I volleyed it straight into the corner.
Oh.
Yeah, I was surprised as well, Tom, don't worry. that's probably as good. You know, I've scored a lot of really good headers that matter.
Let me just finish off. Your all-time favourite player.
Oh.
Your all-time favourite player.
As in, as a kid, yeah, growing up?
No, whatever, your all-time favourite player.
Oh, God, that's a toughie. I mean, my hero growing up was Dennis Law.
Oh, the lawman.
Yeah, I love Dennis. And they say you should never meet your heroes, but I did, and I wasn't disappointed.
No, I met him with Bomber Brown, because he's Bomber Brown's favourite all-time player.
Me too. I mean, yeah. I love Dennis. I mean, in the modern era, you know, you have to look at... I look at Cristiano Ronaldo and I think, what that guy's done, how he's achieved it, how he's kept his levels up, what he's made himself... the dedication to his craft is
still doing it.
Is phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal, and everything he does. So you know, I love watching him.
Yeah.
You know, others will say Messi, and that's fine. I get that. But for me, Ronaldo, unbelievable. I said to you, but I think Dennis as a kid was my
favorite. Dennis,
I loved him. Absolutely loved him, because I always wanted to be a front man, and Dennis was.
Was that always you? You never front man?
No, funny enough. I started off when I was a baby, probably about 9 or 10. Somebody put me in goals. I did. I played in goals, Tom, one game. And I remember, and the team I was playing for won 36-0.
Oh.
And I never had a touch of the football. And I thought, sod this. I said, sod this. They're having much more fun up the other end. So I went out and I played out. And then my school, I started to play out for my school. And we won the Glasgow Cup. My old school, Loch Goyne. We'd never won anything, and we didn't win anything after that, I don't think. And to win the Glasgow Cup, you imagine how many teams you have to play.
Unbelievable.
How many schools are in Glasgow, primary schools. And we won the Glasgow Cup, and I scored the winner. 1-0 we won in the final. And I'll never forget that. Miss MacArthur was our football teacher.
Yeah.
So it was great. It started back then, and I liked the thought of winning. I felt good that night, and I remember that. The thought of winning that game was, it stayed with me, and I thought, yeah, I'd much rather win than lose. I know that much.
Just, it is the end. Do you think you'll come back and work in England again?
I think I'm too old. I don't think anyone would employ me in England, Tom. I don't know. I mean,
as the wealth and knowledge you've got out of the game.
I don't know. Listen, I've got plenty to say, that's for sure. I'd like to think I'll be active enough. We have our contracts run till the summer of 2023, Richard and I. Mm. I know that BN Sports have the Premier League contract till the summer of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they may say, well, I want you to stay, guys. And if that happened, I think we'd probably both stay.
Because you enjoy it that much?
Yeah, we enjoy it that much. And the family, like, once the pandemic's over, the family have before and will after come and visit and stay, and they love it. So, I don't know. One way or the other, I will be back sometime. But whether it's in 2023 or 2025, we'll remain to see. But I don't see. There's too many. It's now a huge industry, this TV punditry. And you see everybody wants to do it. Everybody thinks,
Everybody thinks
they can do it. You and I know differently.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for sure. So I don't know, Tom. I mean, eventually I may come back. I don't know. You know, it's when your family grow up and, you know, they have their own lives.
Yeah.
There's less chance of you needing to come back. So I don't know. Life will take us where it takes us.
Andy, it's been an app. It's flown by. It's over an hour, but you've flown by. Thanks so much. It's been
pleasure,
absolutely
son.
Brilliant.
Pleasure,
thank you
Tom.
Very much indeed. Tom, and as always, Andy Gray. absolute top man. Don't forget, leave us a review. We'd love to hear what you think. Thanks so much. Good or bad, by the way, we want the truth. Thanks very much for being with The Game's Gone.